You guys are really going to like this talk. Today I get to speak to somebody who really emulates what this podcast is about. Dr. Correa is someone who has a passion for science, but also a care for his neighbor. He and his team faced insurmountable odds going to try to vaccinate the Latino community in the southwestern United States. While battling misinformation and a lot of other things, they were able to really reach out and make a difference. It's going to be hard. It's going to be tough. But together, we are able to really make a difference in medicine. It is something that I've learned from him, and I respect him for that. And I think that you're going to be able to feel his passion as well. This is Medicine Beyond the Science. We're here today with Dr. Ricardo Correa, and I'm very thankful and grateful for the fact that you came here onto the podcast, Medicine Behind the Science. Dr. Correa, we are going through a really critical time in the history of the United States, but not only that, just the entire world. Right now, as we speak, is right before the holiday seasons here at the end of 2021. I never would have thought that COVID would still be an issue. COVID would still be a problem. I think it's really important that scientists and the science community, and I know you would agree with me, that it's important that we have good storytelling. Not storytelling in something that's fictitious or fake, but storytelling in the way we can better communicate with our communities, better communicate with people, so that way everything's based upon fact. Research is the number one thing, being able to get the facts out so that way we can make better informed decisions. In New York, where I'm from, we're seeing a huge surge in COVID cases right now. And it's absolutely devastating. What can we do to be able to better communicate to people or to our communities? Because we're seeing a big disparity. We are having, as you're noticing right now, different groups across the United States, but even the world, being kind of hesitant, not knowing what's going on. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of fear that's happening. What's the best way for research to move forward to communicate what we need to do next?
Yeah, thank you so much, Jake. And I agree with you. So I never expected by the end of 2021, we were very similar to by the end of 2020. And again, the frustration that comes with what is going to happen next year, everything is going to be stopped, or all of that kind of things that comes into our mind. So the key issue is what you mentioned too. It's education. And education, it's a word, but I have a lot of things that we need to do. So one of the things is to understand a lot about the disease and the misinformation and disinformation that is happening across the world, with multiple theories, and being social media one of the main drivers of this. So then you have to go and then acculturate with the different communities. Let's talk about Hispanic communities. You have to understand where they are coming from. You have to understand their language. What is their culture? Because Hispanic is not just only one culture. There are multiple cultures. What is their cultures? And then go and talk to them. The best way that I have find to educate different underserved and underrepresented communities is knock door by door and talking to them. But the person that talked to them have to be somebody that they trust in the community. So we use a system where our community clinic and the people and the healthcare worker from the community clinic are the ones that are going and talking to all these people that do not want to get the vaccine, or that have some questions about COVID or new things happening. Because now what is happening is that many people think that, oh, a new variant appear. This is pharmaceuticals trying to create more and more and more disease, so we can get more and more and more buying them from the medications. So trying every day something different, but trying to use those community healthcare workers, those people that works in the clinic, trying to get them into the houses of the people, into the conversation of the people that live in the community. That's more efficacious than just putting a hype person in science And I love Dr. Fauci, but Dr. Fauci is good for the scientific world, for the medical world, but it doesn't translate to the people that live in these communities. So education is important, but education based on your community, on with people that is understanding your community.
I think something you said that was so important was trust. Trust is the biggest key factor. Now, in where you're at over there in Phoenix, Arizona, it's a border state with Mexico. We have a large Latino community coming across. Now, they're not all just from Mexico. They're from all different parts of Latin America crossing over to come into the United States. How much do you think, honestly, if I were a Latin person and I'm crossing over, I'm very wary of giving information or trying to talk to the government because I'm afraid that I could get deported. I'm afraid that I'm going to get, you know, unwanted attention put on me. How big of a feeling do you think that is for people? They're scared. They don't want to talk to the government, or they're worried that, okay, now I get a vaccine, people know where I am, they know my information, and now I'm going to have to, something's going to happen to me.
Yeah, I can tell you that was our main concern at the beginning of COVID. So many people, we didn't have the vaccine, but we need to test people. In our community center, we didn't have the testing. So we have to send them to an ER or to this CARS testing center that were there. And always there was a police or an ICE member that I don't know why they were there. So that created a lot of mistrust in the system. So what we found that the solution was is bringing that to us, to the different clinics that serve this community, and then from us providing that to the patient. So when we start giving the testing, we didn't ask questions, so we just provided testing. When we start giving the vaccine, the only really question that we asked was the date of birth. They didn't have to show us any information. We didn't want any information, just the day of birth to confirm at that time it was more than 18 or more than 16, whatever it was. So that start building trust among the community. Plus, these centers are the ones that were taking care of those populations. So they know that we care about them, and then that we were providing about that kind of things. Definitely many people at the beginning of the pandemic were affected by the issue of not having paperwork, or at that time the issue were the public charge rule, where if you were applying for a permanent status and then you use some of the federal resources, you cannot get it, and all of that. Many people die at home because they didn't want to go to use any resources or go to a hospital. So since that time, we have to start creating campaigns using the media more in a community like Arizona, where radio is so important for the Latinx community, using the radio and transmitting to them the importance of going to these community clinics. If they are afraid, if they don't want to ask questions, going to this. And then the other thing is putting things or flyers or things in our webpage with information that is accurate and evidence-based, so they can read it in Spanish, so they can read it. And this has definitely decreased. We saw at the beginning of the vaccine, when vaccine appeared 1 year ago, that there was a 60% hesitancy in the Latinx community to use the vaccine. Now we are down to 20-something percent of hesitancy, so very low compared with 1 year ago. Still work to do, still education, still to put more things, still knocking the doors. Many of the things happen because we are doing that, but also all of these clinics that are helping the Phoenix and the Tucson community are depending on volunteers. And a volunteer cannot have 100% of their time. So I think that there has a lot of improvement, but still there is room for more improvement.
Yeah, that's fascinating that the hesitancy has decreased so much. And when you say you guys are knocking door to door, you literally mean knocking door to door, going house to house. I mean, there are millions of people living in Phoenix, Arizona. It's a huge city. It's a big area. I've been out there many times. I cannot imagine the undertaking that takes and the amount of people and the resources involved, the teams that are working together around the clock to be able to do that. That's really a fascinating thing. Something that did kind of scare me a little bit when you said that there were ICE people, now ICE being the immigration police and everything, being at these clinics. That is definitely a deterrent and something that would scare me. Did you hear of any cases or anything like that where ICE got involved? And
yeah, so several things. One, knocking door to door, it's we found out that was the most successful intervention. But also think about that we are talking about community clinics that are located in certain parts of Phoenix. We are not addressing the entire 4.5 million people in Phoenix. We are addressing certain zip codes that are the ones that have more of this population. So, and then in that kind of way, they, as I mentioned, these people visit these clinics. So these are the places where they get their care. They cannot go to a healthcare system because they don't have insurance. They most likely are undocumented, so they don't have insurance. So they look at these clinics as the place where they can get care, their chronic conditions. So now when we approach them to their house, it's different. It's not a non-familiar face coming. It's a familiar face coming and just trying to talk to the entire family. Also, another good thing is that when you approach in a Hispanic community, one family is like 20 people.
Of course.
You address a lot of people. You address grandparents. You address grandkids, everybody in the same place. So that's very important. Regarding the second part of why ICE and this security immigration police were there, is zero ideas. We immediately, this happened. This was at the beginning of the pandemic. We as a community and interested in protecting the underrepresented population, we submit a letter to the governor saying that this was no place, it's a public health problem, and everybody needs to be aware, and even you have documents or not, that's not the limitation for. So, but yes, there is cases where I don't have an experience of where they really act on somebody, but just being there in
these testing
centers, in this now COVID vaccine centers. There was a big one that they established in the stadium at the beginning. So why you put their police or ICE in that kind of things? That decrease, of course, I would not want to go there. So that's why we translate that to, hey, let's bring this to the community. And the county here, Maricopa County, has been very supportive to underserved clinics because they have been providing us with the testing that cost, and with the vaccines that we have. So they have been very supportive at the level of the local government, the county, more than at the level of the state government.
That's great to hear that the local government is actually helping out in this case and understanding what is going on, because in my experience, when I've gone to Phoenix, Arizona, it's almost like there's two different worlds living there, two different communities. You have a community called Scottsdale, which are multimillionaire people. I mean, the wealthiest of the wealthiest in America, living in there on golf courses and having this wonderful life. And you go just down the street and it's almost like a forgotten people, a forgotten world. It's the undocumented, the workers, the day laborers, everyone that kind of get overlooked and we pretend that they don't exist. And the fact that at least you've been able to say, hey, give them a voice. Hey, reach out to them on the radio. Hey, knock door to door. Hey, go into the communities that people kind of just forget or overlook. That makes a huge difference. Do you see, like, and it's true, like, there's a big difference. It's almost two different worlds there. And it's not just in Phoenix. It's all in all the different cities across America right now. I'm noticing that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There's always two different realities in every city. In Phoenix, even in Scottsdale, we see it. So you are just in a street that have huge houses and all the money of the world. But then the two blocks away, there is an underserved community. Doesn't have to be exactly undocumented, but it's a but underserved community that do not get the same care. So, for example, with the city of Scottsdale, there is a lot of programs that the city has developed for Hispanic population, for Latinx. And then we have been collaborating with them. A lot of the things was via Zoom, because was not in person meetings, but was via Zoom, and then providing a space for them to ask us, to ask in Spanish about questions. And this is talking about Scottsdale. So we are talking about that there is in the same city, the difference that it makes. You have a huge healthcare system that is one of the biggest healthcare system in the country in Scottsdale. And then you have people that cannot see a doctor because they don't have insurance, or they have a poor insurance, so nobody accept them. And this is the disparity that COVID-19 flourish. It doesn't mean that the existence of COVID-19, no. It's just that COVID-19 flourish and make everybody more aware. But this is something that we have been living forever. And nobody was taking any actions into this kind of things. Now, a little bit more with the new administration, it's having some grants that helps underserved clinics, some grants that helps, for example, for the vaccination. There's multiple grants that have been coming from the CDC, from other entities that just to promote vaccination on underrepresented minorities, because really the disparity was seen clearly. And as I mentioned, many people die at the beginning and still dying with this pandemic is not because sometimes they don't want to understand. It's because they don't have the resources. There's social determinant of health that affect. These people are the ones that are in the front line. These people are the ones that cannot get telemedicine as a work or telework. They cannot do that. These people are the ones that are the janitors, the ones, the farm workers, the ones that cannot be absent. There is no pay for sick days. So they work every day, and they, if they are sick, they continue working because that's the only time that they can bring money to their house. So helping that kind of things, we got an anonymous grant to provide some support to those people. It was 2x checks. It was not the same amount as the federal checks, but it was some amount. And that with that, we help a little bit the community. So trying to continue doing this work, I think that will be the norm now more than the rare that it was in the past.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing that you were saying was that the health insurance and there's a social detriment and everything that's taking place. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a non-documented or an undocumented person. I mean, in the United States, there's so many people without health insurance. I'm one of them at times. Sometimes I didn't have health insurance. Now, right now, I'm paying out of pocket for my health insurance. And even still, it's not the best health insurance. So I go to the doctor, and all of a sudden, just for a common checkup, it's like $200, even with my health insurance. And just for a simple antibiotic, it's all of a sudden ridiculously expensive. And there's times where I'm sick and I just don't go to the doctor, even though I have health insurance, because it's still too expensive. And I'm not even going to bother wasting my time, because you start to get angry too. And it's a misguided anger, because I'm going, these doctors, they just want to take my money from me. And that's not true. I know that's not true, because the doctors are really trying their best to help the community. The doctors are doing their best to help. And you were saying before, people are thinking, well, these pharmaceutical companies are just trying to take more money from us. That's why they're trying to get another variant or another booster shot, because they just want more money out of me. And I think we need to step back. And it's just unfortunate that it's a system that's been implemented from the healthcare system. It's not an individual doctor. It's not an individual CEO at a company. It's a system that needs to get overhauled in this sense, but this is still a pandemic. This is a major health problem. And nobody's trying to take advantage of you during this time. If anything, it would probably be those on social media trying to feed misinformation. But in terms of the medical community, people are trying their best to try to help you. And what's the one thing I wanted to, like, if for those listening right now, we have them throughout the United States, but we're also reaching all around the world. What's the one thing you would like to tell them in terms of, say, they're going, well, we had the first vaccine, you have the second vaccine shot, now there's a booster shot. It must not be working if there's now we're having to do booster shots and all that. But what would you tell them? Like, hey, listen, like, it's very important, like, still, like, from what you're seeing, from the results, the research that you do, what would you say to those who were maybe hesitant again? There's still 20% hesitancy, you said, in the Latino community for getting a vaccine. What would you try to tell them right now?
Yeah. So one of the things is it's that is very important is that we base our decisions in the medical community on evidence.
Yep.
And many of the what the evidence has shown is that the vaccine efficacy is very good and secure and is effective. So if you compare, just let's put the U.S. as a perspective. During the first year of the pandemic, when the vaccine was not there, we have approximately 600,000 dead in the country. 1 year later, we have 800,000 deaths. Yes, I know, we continue to have deaths. Mainly the main reason after the vaccine is people that do not want to get vaccinated, but decreased from 600 to 200,000. So now still a lot of work to do, but it's very important to understand that the evidence have shown that this is important to do, and the best prevention mechanism is the vaccine, and the way to eradicate the virus is the vaccine. And this is not now. We show this with multiple vaccines through the history of the world, including the smallpox vaccine that deleted the virus from the world. So it's very important to understand why vaccination is. The other thing, the other concept is that this is not a U.S. epidemic. This is a world pandemic. And if we only care about our country, and if we only care about trying to vaccinate people in this or X or Y or Z country, we are not doing anything, because people will still be in other countries without vaccination because they don't have the resources, because there is no education in that country. And then this is a world where we are moving, and that's how you see Omicron start in one part of the world, Europe and Africa, and then now it's spreading across the world immediately. So it's something that we need to understand, that this is a world problem, and as humans we need to get together, and the countries that have more power provide vaccine and education to the countries that have less power, and that will be the only way that I see that this can end. Meanwhile, there continue being countries that the percentage of vaccination is 4% or 5%, there will be a issue to origin a new variant, and this new variant coming and then probably finding a way outside the vaccine. So concentrated in our countries, yes, is important, but also concentrated across the world. And sometimes we can see this in every country. There is two differences, as you mentioned, two different perspectives. The people that have all and that have access to all the knowledge, but the people that do not have that access, and then not having that access limited. And this was created by the system that we have, by the systemic racism and discrimination that have access forever, because the ones that have the knowledge have the power. So we want that everybody in this public health crisis have the same knowledge to make the correct decision, and that we can eliminate at the end the virus. And at this point, vaccination is the best strategy, with the use of other preventions meanwhile, with the decrease or stop the virus, that is the use of mask, the not gathering in places that there are crowded people, the hand hygiene, that kind of things help. Meanwhile, we achieve that goal, that is, we want to eradicate or eliminate the virus.
Yeah, and you were saying before, when you go to a home of like a Latino household, you have 20 people inside a house or whatever. My wife, she's from Vietnam, and it's very similar within the Vietnamese communities too. You know, these immigrant populations, we have a multi-generational household. it's so much harder for people in those type of communities to socially distance when there's so many of you crowded together. But another thing that you see is that in these type of communities is that when you're sometimes in these underrepresented groups here in the southern United States, where I'm at right now, you have poorer health in terms of diet and the things that people are able to afford to eat. And you see diseases like diabetes running rampant too within the youth and within other people. How much more important is it for somebody who has like an underlying health condition such as diabetes to really make sure that they get vaccinated to really prevent, because they're much more of a risk if you have a disease such as diabetes or any other heart problem to now getting COVID, you're up on the list there of most likely not making it.
Correct. And this is very important. Any person that have a chronic disease condition from diabetes, that is between diabetes and obesity is the most prevalent disease that we have in the US and more likely in many other countries across the world. So any person that have one of this condition plus any lung or heart problems or immunosuppressive problems, they are at risk that if they get the COVID-19 virus, they are going to get a serious illness. And we saw this in people that were dying and that continue to die is more frequently that person that is some condition. So for those people, the best thing to do is to get the vaccine and the booster. If you got the two shots and it's more than 6 months, just get the booster. If the booster is not available in your country, then just wait and continue the precaution that we have. I know that is our energy to continue the precautions decrease because we are tired. And we are tired of not of using masks, and we are tired of not going out to crowded places. We're tired of that. But we have a light at the end of the tunnel. The thing is that we need to get there. We are not there yet. Many people have assumed that we are there and they are not caring. And these are the problems. And this is where a new variant come. And now we have more contamination. And now we are looking the same thing and the same frustration. And then we never will get it to that light. So what we need to do is try to convince our families, trying to convince our neighbors, try to convince our friends that vaccination is important, that still we need to continue that effort. Because if we have been for this for 2 years, we don't want to die at the end of the run. So let's continue that. Most likely, if we do this, this will disappear. And definitely making the point that you mentioned about multi-house household, people living in a house with. This is one of the reasons that where you can see like in New York, when at the beginning of the pandemic, many of the people that were dying were the poor people. Mm-hmm. On the representative people is because, yes, you tell them you have to isolate, but isolate in how? Like in a person that live in 10 in a house with 10 bedrooms, yes, you can isolate in one of the bedrooms. But when 10 people live in one bedroom, then you cannot isolate the people. So that's also a message that need to convey with the group of people that you are dealing. When it comes from a national TV, say isolation is fine, yes, but that doesn't translate to certain groups where you cannot isolate. So what are the strategies can that person do? And at this point, the ones that should be the leaders in vaccination should be the underrepresented people, because they are the ones that we knew that got it more, not because of any biological or anything. It's because the social issue that those people were living, where more condition, chronic condition happening, less access to healthcare. So all of that play into role, and now getting a virus.
You were saying that people are tired, but I think the people who are probably the most tired, I'm tired of wearing a mask, or I'm tired of having a social distance. The medical personnel are so tired. They are exhausted. And I'm sure that throughout your entire career, you never expected things to be like this. I mean, when you start your career and you're doing all of that, you've had a really fantastic move in your life and the way you've been able to go from different countries, from Panama here to the United States. And it's just been fascinating how you grow, but life will throw a curveball and it will surprise you. And I'm sure there are times where you're frustrated and you're tired. You want this over just as much as anybody else. In closing, what's the one thing that keeps you still passionate? What's the one thing that still keeps you moving forward to keep going and keep fighting and still having? Because you've been so optimistic as I've been talking. You said, you know, I know we can do this. I know we can move forward. What really keeps you moving forward?
Yeah, and this is a very good question in the sense that if we look at how many people have left healthcare, from physicians to nurses to technicians, probably 10% of people have left healthcare during these 2 years. And something is that you mentioned, the frustration that nobody's listening to you, the tiredness of working 36 hours and seeing again more people infected, again another wave, again. So all of that burn out many people. So that's important. But I think that the main thing here is that as a medical community, we have shown in the past to be successful in many occasions, combating diseases like influenza, as I mentioned, the smallpox, but also combating chronic conditions and finding solutions to that. So I think that what keeps me awake and with the same passion is that we have proved to be a successful in the past. We need to continue the effort. Changing human behavior is very difficult. So that's why we are facing this thing now, but we have to try it. And that's the reason why many of us came to medicine, because we know that it's going not to be easy, but it's going to be rewarding when five years from now, I don't know, 5-10 years from now, we say, you know, we destroy the virus. We live in a difficult several years, but now it's different. So that is something that I think that we still have hope. The only thing that we need is the collaboration of the community. And then with the collaboration of the community and the medical world, we will be able to achieve that goal that is destroying the virus.
Dr. Ricardo Correa, I want to just thank you so much for your help. Not just being able to, again, clarify things here on the podcast, but also for what you're doing right now. You're in a period of history, and you're helping people who generally would not be getting help. And you're doing a lot of work and a lot of tireless nights, I'm sure. But yet you're really pursuing things. And just as a normal one person to another, I want to say thank you for all the work that you're doing here. And thank you for all that you're trying to do to lead teams together. And I'm sure it's many people working all the time, but yeah, you guys are really making a difference and an impact on communities. And that's a great thing to see, that we also have a human connection, more than just doing the science, more than just medicine, that we look out for one another as human beings. So thank you so much, Dr. Correa, for your time and for what you're doing.
Thank you, Jake, because the other thing is I want to thank you, because the only way where we can express our opinion and we can transmit information is through these platforms. And I really thank all the work that you have been doing, because this is the way that we should go. This is the way that we should do to teach others. So thank you. I think that this is a world where we live. It's a collaboration. We are doing the medical part, but the medical part is not enough. We need a lot of other parts in this, and thank you for the work.
Thank you so much. It was fantastic speaking with you today. All the best to you and everything and future success. I can't wait till this whole is all behind us and we're able to look out on this victoriously. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe to wherever you'd like to hear podcasts. Until then, be curious and be kind.